The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McRae. Kit Farrow is a name well known to many beef producers. His focus has always been driven by profitability and making your cattle fit your environment. He admits that many may look at his ideas with skepticism, but he has many years of experience now helping producers all across the country build herds that are turning profits. I get his thoughts on what we should consider to improve our operations. It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, and it's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. It's time to rethink nitrogen. Pivot BioProven replaces nitrogen fertilizer with microbes that adhere to the crop's root system and apply nitrogen each day. Performance report data shows Pivot BioProven consistently outperforms synthetic nitrogen fertilizer year over year, providing corn growers improved yields and a more dependable nitrogen supply that isn't lost to the environment. To read the performance report, go to pivotbio.com. And for more information on Pivot BioProven, text PROVEN to 31313. I think all of us would like our work to produce a profit. Kit Farrow helps people find the profits in the beef business, but he says it may take looking at your herd from a different perspective, and that can be difficult if you've always seen raising cattle from one point of view. He is focused on fitting his genetics to his environment and assisting other producers to do the same. But how does this perspective affect everyone from cow-calf producers to those who are finishing cattle? What changes should we consider? And what is the feedback he gets from others? We dive into a good conversation about the factors to building a profitable business. Kit Farrow is my guest, and many of you listening to this will be familiar with that name and his cattle company. But Kit, you know, you've been around the cattle business really all your life, but for those that aren't familiar with where you're at and what you do, why don't you begin by just talking a little bit about where you're located and kind of the background of your cattle operation?
Yes, we're located in eastern Colorado. This is right on the, maybe 20 miles from Kansas, right in the center of eastern Colorado. It's short grass country, very limited, unpredictable rainfall, sometimes almost no rainfall. Our annual precipitation is around 12 inches. This year we got about half that and are being forced to move cows away from here. But I grew up mostly in this area. I wasn't born here, but I grew up in this area. My dad was born and raised in the city and wanted to be a cowboy, so he had a small place and had an off-farm job. And I could see, you know, this is what I wanted to do, but following and working with him was probably not going to work. He didn't have the vision to bring anybody else into the business. And so after being away from home for about 15 years, while we were able to come back to this area, not the exact area, but real close, and bought at least a large chunk of land, bought some cows, actually bought the cows my dad was running, and that was in 1985, so, you know, that's maybe 35 years ago now. We could see that I guess my first thought for I was going to try to show everybody around here how to be a successful rancher, and little did I know that I knew nothing about being a successful rancher, but I had an open mind. My dad had an open mind because he was born and raised in the city, so he had no restrictions, traditions, or anything else, and I think I inherited some of that. But we were able to see that what most people were doing in the 1980s was not going to last or be profitable. You know, the big push there, those that are old enough to remember, will remember that, you know, we needed to get cattle as big as we could, as quick as we could, and that's a doable goal. I mean, we, as an industry, became very successful. But within just a few years, my dad was still alive. I had a couple of friends that said, you know, this makes no sense. I said, what we really need to do is increase profit, not weaning weights. And so, you know, we started back in the late 1980s and said, okay, we're going to go against the mainstream focus of increasing pounds per animal and we're going to increase pounds in profit per acre instead. And we've not varied from that one little bit in the last 35 years. At that time, we were very, I think the industry just looked at us and shook their head and said, you know, these guys, they're not going to make it. And that prompted us to get into the seed stock business, which means, you know, we hunted and hunted and hunted to find some registered Angus and Red Angus cows that could do what we wanted to do, increase pounds per acre, not per calf, and have a very low cost of production. And so, you know, we had our first bull sale actually 30 years ago this year. We sold 6 bulls, and it's just grown from there. We started sending out newsletters in 1994, and our newsletter subscription went from 200 friends and neighbors to we're over 20,000 right now. So, and the reason that grew, I think, is because we were the oddballs. You know, nobody wanted to do what we were doing, but they wanted to know what we were doing. So anyway, you know, we've been at this for 35 years. We've been selling bulls for 30 years. We are now selling 1,000 bulls, over 1,000 bulls a year, in, I believe, 6 or 7 different bull sales in 5 different states. And we also have a program in Australia. So, you know, we went from being nobody to being somebody, but we're still the oddballs in the industry. I would say 96, 97% of cow-calf producers still think we might be lunatics on the lunatic fringe, and that's okay with us. You know, as long as we have enough people that understand what it takes to be profitable in this business, you know, we're okay with the rest of them not being profitable. I guess that's probably a longer introduction than you were asking for.
No, it's very good. Well, you've gotten into what I wanted to go to, in that, you know, matching your stock environment, you call your bulls solar bulls, and it's really living off of what you have around your ranch. Isn't that kind of the concept?
That's exactly the concept. You know, we're basically, as cow-calf producers everywhere in the world, we're basically in this solar business. I mean, we take solar energy and we convert it into a marketable and very high-quality food product. And, you know, the goal, if you want to be profitable, is to minimize the iron and the oil between the cow, the sun and the consumer. So we're in the solar business. We call our bulls solar bulls. You know, we are focused year round on using what's growing on our ranch. That's provided by rainfall and sunshine, and we develop our bulls on grass as well. So, you know, we differentiate ourselves from most seed stock producers, for sure, and a lot of commercial ranchers who spend a lot of time and money feeding cows, developing bulls on high energy rations that make them look pretty, but you know, they have nowhere to go when somebody, the new customer, buys them. They go home. There's no way to go except down. I mean, they're going to lose weight because they've been overfed. They're diesel bulls instead of solar bulls. I'll throw this in. You know, we've done this in eastern Colorado from the very beginning, but we knew that this type of cow and this type of program would work just about anywhere you put it. So we now have several herds in the state of Missouri, your state. We've been selling bulls in Missouri, I think. We've been raising bulls in Missouri for over 20 years and selling them for probably 10 or 12. So, you know, not only do our cattle fit eastern Colorado, we've created herds that fit fescue in Missouri. You know, this is what they were born and raised on. This is what they're developed on. This is what they're going to spend the rest of their lives on. We've done the same thing in Texas. We've done the same thing in Nebraska. We're doing the same thing in Montana and Australia. You know, the same type, the right type of cow will adapt to just about any environment that we put her in.
Right, right. Well, talk about those genetics then, because certainly a lot of your bulls are going to be a smaller frame score. they are made in a sense to adapt to where you've got them. And I suppose those genetics will differ a little bit between what you're going to have for somebody where you're at, Cheyenne Wells, Colorado, versus Missouri versus Alabama and so forth, based on grass and the grazing and the ranch that they've got, right?
Yeah, you just reminded me. I forgot about our Alabama program. This fall was our very first sale in Alabama. We have come up with what we think is some of the best heat tolerant cattle in the world. We're striving to avoid Brahma cattle in our heat tolerant cattle in our composites, and not because Brahma are bad, simply because Brahma are big cattle. They eat too much. They're not that fertile. Meat quality issues and those sort of things. So, we also have a program there, but the cattle will be smaller. 35 years ago when we started, we really weren't sure what we were looking for. The rest of the industry is going from 3 to 4 frame cattle and just trying to get them up to 7 and 8 frame cattle as quick as they could, and that's not hard to do apparently, because we did it as an industry. So we didn't really reduce frame size. I mean, we kind of stayed with the same cattle that were working in the late 1970s and early 1980s, and not really on purpose. We just put, if we put the cows out on our program, our ranch, and we expected them to graze year round, no hay, no supplements, no protein, no salt year round, on the younger stock, once they've been weaned, we provide an apple cider vinegar, which is like 2 ounces per day, just a penny a day or something. But when you put cattle out, you take all the feed away, you quit vaccinating them, you quit worming them, you quit treating flies, you take all the crutches away that keep cattle standing up, and the ones that are adapted to our environment continue to stand up. The rest of them fall over, and we get rid of them. And yes, there is a difference between eastern Colorado and Texas, eastern Colorado and Missouri. We're in a 12-inch rainfall area. Missouri's in a 40-inch rainfall area for the most part. We understand that, and people from Missouri or Texas or wherever will come to me and say, we live in a lot better environment than you in Colorado. And I'm not sure that's true. It's just a different environment. I don't think it's any better. I wouldn't want to trade anybody environments. But they think that because they live in a 40-inch rainfall area, they should be able to have bigger cows, higher milking cows, cows that that probably won't work on the desert of eastern Colorado. And my comeback to them is, if I wanted to, I could run 1,800-pound Holsteins, high milking, huge Holsteins on the desert of eastern Colorado. I just can't run very many of them. So when you get the picture and get your head wrapped around this, it really doesn't matter how much rainfall you have. You will be able to run many more low maintenance, moderate sized cattle than high maintenance, framier cattle in the same environment, any environment. And in any environment, whether it's Alabama, Texas, Nebraska, Montana, Colorado, the smaller, low maintenance cattle, we can run substantially more, maybe 30% more of those cows than what our neighbors are running with the high maintenance, bigger frame cow. So we are producing substantially more pounds per acre, which is where the profit is. Profit is affected by stocking rate and cost of production more than anything else. So if we have low input cattle and we can increase stocking rate by 25, 30, 35%, we're going to produce a whole lot more pounds per acre. And that's true in Missouri, where they get 40 inches of rainfall. It's true in Colorado, where we get 12 inches of rainfall. So, yes, size is one factor. However, it's not as big a difference as you think. A lot of people come out and see our cows or look at our cows in Missouri or Texas and say, they're not as small as I thought they would be. There's only 2 inches of difference between a frame score 4 and a frame score 5. And that 2 inches of difference is going to be between the ground and the belly, and that you can't eat that. It doesn't weigh very much. We're putting the same type cow on our shorter legs. We change the maintenance requirements. Those low maintenance cows require a whole lot less feed to maintain their survival, than the high maintenance cows. So we can't put on weight, we can't put on fat, we can't reproduce, or the cows can't, until they meet their maintenance requirements. So maintenance requirements is, you know, we didn't even know that term back 35 years ago, but that's become what we say, okay, we have ultra-low maintenance cattle. It's a whole lot easier and more profitable to produce cattle that fit my environment than it is to change my environment to fit my cattle. And that's basically what we're doing wherever we're doing it. But the same type of cow is going to do more in every environment. Now, in Missouri, you know, our biggest issue there is fescue. We need fescue-tolerant cows. In Texas and Alabama, heat tolerances are our biggest issues. You know, every place has a little different issue, so the genetics are going to adapt to fit those locations. But in reality, we're talking about the same cow, same type of cow, adapting to just about any environment we put her in.
You answer this question, I know, on your website, but I'm sure you hear from people all the time that say, well, if these cattle aren't as big, they aren't going to finish very well and so forth. But what have you found with how your cattle finish out of these cows and bulls that you have?
That's a good question. And for years, starting in 1994, when people started knowing who we were across the nation, you know, I was always asked, I bet I gave 20 to 60 speaking engagements a year back in the 90s and the early 2000s. I'm glad that's tapered off, but that would be one of those questions, especially in the 90s. You know, I know your cattle will work really good on the ranch, but how are they going to work in the feedlot? And, you know, the first thing I will say, because I'm usually talking to ranchers, is that most of your profit or loss is going to be made within your own fence. What happens outside your fence is not going to affect you that much, even if you own those cattle all the way to the packing plant. But you're correct. The second thing I say, you know, whose profit are you worried about? The packers, the feedlot guy, or your own? And if it's your own, you know, pounds per acre is what's going to do it. Now, we can increase pounds per acre with smaller and smaller cows. We can do even better with sheep. We can do even better with chickens and rabbits. But most of us don't want to raise chickens and rabbits or sheep. So there's a limit to how small these cows can be. They still have to fit the industry box. They still have to, you know, there has to be a place to send them. And as long as we have three-frame cattle that still produce great-tasting, high-marbling meat, we're still in business. But the feedlots now will say, you know, what they want is a high-maintenance, lean, late-maturing, bigger-framed animal that they can keep in the same pen for a long period of time. They charge for yardage days, and they charge for feed. So the animals that obviously make the most money for them are taller, late maturing, lean, meaning they don't put on fat very easy until they get huge. You know, they're not going to finish out until they're huge. And that's why, you know, there's so many fats going out of the feedlot weighing 1,500 to 1,700 pounds. That's where they make the most money. And the packers are going to say, you know, as long as their head doesn't drag the floor, we really don't care how big they get. You know, they get paid the same way. You know, if they have a 1,700-pound animal or a 1,300-pound animal, they get, you know, basically they can process it in about the same amount of time. But, you know, as far as how do they feed in the feedlot, you know, they're not going to be, our kind of cattle will not spend near as many days in the feedlot or eat near as much corn before they're ready to go to town. I mean, they, instead of being 1,500 to 1,700 pounds, they may be 1,200 to 1,300 pounds. We can finish cattle, our cattle, on grass, and they're going to weigh over 1,250 on grass and grade choice. So, you know, it's not that our cattle can't finish. They just don't have to, they don't require all the high energy feed and time to do it. You know, they're going to reach the point that they stop growing up and start growing out. And, you know, marbling is one of those things that we excel in. You know, putting putting marbling on our cattle comes at a lot younger date. But again, if you own your cattle all the way through the feedlot, you'll probably make more money. And you, in fact, you can't. There's a research comes out of Iowa that says, you know, the low maintenance cows on the ranch produce the low maintenance steers in a feedlot and will be the most productive on a grid based system. But, you know, the feeder and the packer are going to say, you know, that's not really what we want. And I'm going to say, I really don't care what you want. You're going to make your own living. We've got to make our own living. And I want to help our customers, which are cow-calf producers, be the most profitable and successful that they can be as long as they have a product that has a place to go to. And we do. You know, there's no problem with that. We do finish very well. We just don't have to be 1,500 pounds to do it.
Because you use your resources there, your grass, so well, have you looked at any grass finishing? Are you looking at that market at all, or has it been mostly going on into a conventional type of feedlot setting?
I would say 80% of the calves sired by our bulls, and that's a lot of calves. You know, we sell over 1,000 bulls a year and have been doing that for several years. Our bulls, I mean, we're running our bulls with twice as many cows and heifers as anybody else around because they're solar bulls, they're grass developed, they're low maintenance, they can handle it. You know, where everybody else is running cattle or a young bull with 20 head, we're running them with 40. Mature bulls. You know, here on our ranch this summer, we had two groups of over 80, one bull per group. I mean, these are mature bulls. They're not virgin bulls. They don't mind that work. I mean, sex is not work for a bull. But what I'm saying is that we sire a lot of calves. I would say 80% of the calves sired by our bulls go through the conventional system, you know, sale barn, feedlot, pack and plant, just like everybody else's calves. 20% are probably being grass finished. You know, we probably have that's not our biggest market, but it's our fastest growing market. That low maintenance, moderate size, early maturing, easy fleshing cattle do very well on grass, and that's what we need on the ranch. You know, if we have the right kind of females on the ranch, we have exactly the right kind of steers to grass finish. Now, we did have a partnership with Cactus Feeders and Tyson Foods a couple years ago, and this lasted for a little over a year, where Tyson Foods was looking for genetics to grass finish. Cactus Feeders has hundreds of irrigated circles around every one of their feedlots, and we were planting those circles to cover crops. So we'd have a cover crop we would plant in the spring, another one for summer, another one for fall, another one for winter. We move those steers daily. You know, they do very well. Like I said, the two groups coming, the first two groups coming out of that program were weighing 1250 and grading, you know, like 60, 70, 80% choice on nothing but forages. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be a growing part of this industry. It's going to be consumer driven. You know, you and maybe others are going to say, just shake your head and say, you know, I had that grass fed stuff before. It's terrible. Well, that's because it wasn't finished. It's fed. You know, any old cow that eats grass is grass fed. But if you can get them to grade choice on grass, it's no different than what you have grading choice on, you know, on grain. In fact, it's better. It does not leave that film in the top of your mouth when you eat it. You know, I can tell if it's grass-fed or grain-fed just from the eating experience. So, yes, we are looking into that. It's a growing market. It's probably within the last 20 years. It's growing while conventional beef is shrinking very slowly, but it's shrinking.
There's so much I could ask you, but I know we're up against the clock here, but I want to make sure before we wind up, you have a lot of different ways that people can find your information on the internet. You've got, you know, your 10 philosophies behind your bulls. What things do you want folks to know before we wind up here?
Well, I guess I'd like, if they're not already receiving our weekly emails and newsletters, and they're not afraid of somebody that's a very opinionated, you know, I'd like them to sign up for our emails and our newsletters. If I've already offended you, I don't sign up because I'm going to offend you again. But I would suggest going to our website, pharaohcattle.com. Not hard to find. Not hard to find a way to sign up for our weekly devotions, our weekly emails, our quarterly newsletters. There's a lot of information on our website. You can go back through different older newsletters, and maybe you'll invite me back sometime, and we can finish the story.
Well, you have a lot of good information. Hey, before I wind up, I've got to know, because I've been to the outback of Australia. What are you doing in Australia with these cows? Because there is not much out there for them to eat. I'm curious. I got to ask before we wind up, what's the Australia program look like?
It looks very similar to what it looks like here. Our program there is in New South Wales. It's not the center of the outback, but you know their droughts are similar and worse than our droughts here in Colorado. When they get a drought, it's a long-lasting drought, and it's devastating. Our program there has been through the droughts, has been through the fires. But basically, we're not doing much different there than what we're doing here in eastern Colorado. The cattle do work. You know, anytime you have a drought or some restriction somewhere, the low-maintenance cattle will outperform the high maintenance cattle. You know, Australia is absolutely no different than the beef industry in America. You know, we went from the right kind of cattle 50 years ago to the wrong kind of cattle, and we went fast, hard and fast, and most producers don't realize how profitable they could be if they could get back to the right kind of cattle and solar energy.
Well, very good info, and I'll encourage folks to get your newsletter, because you have a lot of good stuff in there, and it helps people to think. And I know you talk a lot about the profitability, and you have several young producers on there that talk about getting started, perhaps similar to what you were, a couple of decades or more ago, just getting started. Lots of good info in there for folks.
I love to get people started that don't have anything, because you can do it. All it takes is an open mind and willingness to change. And the established ranchers, cow-calf producers, that's a struggle for them. They do not have an open mind, and they're probably not going to open that mind up until they're back against a wall and they're about to fail. So the young guys that don't have any baggage coming into this are being very successful just simply by doing the right things.
Nope, I think you're right. Well, Kit, I sure appreciate the time.
I enjoyed it. Thanks.
As Kit says, some will see his ideas as out there, but it's hard to argue with success. He continues to grow his operation, and his ideas are ones I find discussed by many in the cattle business. No doubt, there are items to consider for all of us looking to make money raising beef. Thanks for listening. Remember to follow Farming the Countryside and American Countryside on Facebook for more information on these topics and many more. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. The Farm in the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.